strong.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Jill Robbins, Alice Bryant, and Brian Lynn. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will continue our journey through America's national parks. But first, here is John Russell.
White abalone are at risk of dying out, but scientists in California have developed a special way to help the sea snail population reproduce. Kristen Aquilino is lead scientist for the White Abalone Captive Breeding Program based at the University of California Davis Bodega Marine Laboratory. White abalone, in her words, cannot come back without our help. The creatures, once common in the coastal waters of Southern California and Mexico, have been on the U.S. Federal Endangered Species list since 2001. Its population has been hurt by overfishing, low reproduction rates, and disease. After about 10 years, a time in which no white abalone were produced, Aquilino's team increased their numbers by making up a special mixture. In the day-long process, the scientists soak the snails for hours in what they call a chemical love potion. A potion is a liquid or drink that has a special or mysterious effect on something. The scientists' potion has seawater and hydrogen peroxide. It leads the creatures to release their sperm and eggs. Aquilino said, "The abalone are terrible at long-distance relationships. We're putting them in a really romantic solution." She added the goal of the work was to create young that will end up back out in the wild. Numbers of young abalone, known as larvae, reached 25,000 in 2019, but dropped in 2020 as pandemic lockdowns limited the lab to just one event for the season. However, the larvae created then had among the highest survival rates so far, Aquilino said. Failure to reproduce means another abalone mating takes place again several weeks later. "We want to make sure we're not stressing them out too much," Aquilino said. "Hopefully that little bit of extra time gives them some more time to become very productive." The young abalone formed are packed in bags and shipped to partner organizations in California. These young abalone have a better chance of survival with more space. For Aquilino, the work is personal. As a student, she met her husband on a dive that studied red abalone. Aquilino's engagement ring also has an abalone pearl. Her daughter plays with a fake abalone farm tank at home. "It has become a really important part of my identity and my family's identity," Aquilino said. I'm John Russell.
For 14 months,
a French wine aged in space. Now, it has returned to Earth to be sold. A single bottle from a case of Space Age Bordeaux is being put up for sale by the auction house Christie's. It may cost up to $1 million. The wine is a 2000 vintage Petrus. It is considered a world-class red wine made from Merlot grapes in the Pomerol region of Bordeaux. The sale was announced Tuesday in London. Tim Triptree works for Christie's Wine and Spirits Division. He said the bottle adds to a greater understanding of the maturation of wine. The money from the sale will go to the European rocket company, Space Cargo Unlimited. The company has experimented with viticulture and microgravity. It launched the 12 bottles of Petrus 2000 in November 2019 and flew them to the International Space Station. The bottles were taken back to Earth in January. They spent almost 440 days and about 300 million kilometers in orbit. The wine returned to Bordeaux, where a bottle was opened for a taste test at the Institute for Wine and Vine Research. Top wine experts compared the space-aged wine with Petrus bottles that stayed on Earth. Jane Anson is a leading wine critic and a writer for the wine magazine Decanter. She and the other two experts thought there was a clear difference between the two. The space bottle seems more evolved than I would expect from a 21-year-old bottle of Petrus 2000, Anson said in Decanter. It is beautiful and nuanced, with fine tannins and a sense energy. The wine investment company, Vinovest, says a bottle of 2000 Petrus usually costs about $5,366. One sold at auction for $51,660 in 2018. Christie's is selling a bottle of the space-aged wine, along with a bottle of the original Earth-aged Petrus 2000. The purchase also includes a set of glasses and a corkscrew made from a meteorite. Christie's says the sale price could reach $1 million. I'm Jill Robbins.
Dottie Tantui worked hard for years to grow rice on her small piece of land near the mouth of the Mekong River in Vietnam. But now Tui has started farming shrimp. Many of her neighbors over the last 10 years have done the same. In the past, such a change was unlikely. However, the effects of climate change are making rice growing in her area more difficult. Seawater has brought higher salt levels to the Mekong River Delta area. Officials hope the move toward shrimp farming will improve the country's seafood industry. The government has set the high goal of increasing shrimp exports by more than 100% to $10 billion by 2025. Local governments are giving farmers training and some assistance, including loans with good terms. Life was very hard for us until we began to farm shrimp, Tui told Reuters news agency. The 52-year-old farmer also said many shrimp farmers around here have been able to build nice houses and open savings accounts at banks. We planted rice, but we harvested no rice, said Tha Thein Long, another shrimp farmer. There was a time the rice could still grow when the water was still fresh. But then the water became more and more salty each year. At least one-third of the rice farming area along the 72-kilometer coastline of Sokchang Province has been affected by seawater in recent years. That information comes from Deng Minghuang. He is the former director of the province's Agriculture Promotion Center. Huang said the center has urged people to farm things that will grow in salty water. He said climate change is affecting everyone, so they have to try new things to survive. Vietnam is the world's third largest exporter of rice. But earnings from shrimp exports have risen above those from rice since 2013. And they continue to grow. Seafood processors around here come to buy up all the shrimp we farm, said Tha Thanh Tung, who is 44 years old. He is one of Thuy's five siblings who have all moved from rice to shrimp farming. We heard they're exporting the shrimp to Europe, China, and the United States, he said. Industry experts say exports will rise by 5 to 10% yearly over the next 10 years. Land used for shrimp farming is increasing by 3 to 5% a year. Vietnam's largest seafood exporter is Minh Phu Seafood Corporation. It has the goal of turning the country into the world's largest shrimp exporter. The company expects trade agreements between Vietnam and other countries to help raise the country's exports to one quarter of the world's total by 2045. That could help ease economic pressure that the Southeast Asian country will face in the years ahead. The World Bank estimates that climate change may lower Vietnam's national income by as much as 3.5% by 2050.
The change to shrimp from rice comes with its own set of environmental problems. The International Union for Conservation of Nature estimates more than half of Vietnam's mangrove tree forests have been cleared to make space for shrimp farming. Mangroves protect coastal areas from soil loss and the effects of powerful storms. And experts criticize the lack of government oversight of the new small shrimp farms. They have many questions, including what the shrimp eat and what happens to the shrimp waste. There are also concerns about the use of antibiotics to treat disease in farmed shrimp. Antibiotics can be found in shrimp waste. Waste is usually thrown back into surrounding waterways. This raises the risk of chemical pollution in nearby areas and harm to the food chain. Matt Landos said these kinds of unseen pollutants are not discussed enough. He is an Australia-based animal medicine scientist. He told Reuters that pollutants are present at harmful levels in the area. The increasing salt levels that led to shrimp farming could harm the mouth of the Mekong area in the long term. A rise of 0.7 to 1 meter would put about 40% of the area underwater, said Lee Ang Tuon. He teaches at the College of Environment and Natural Resources at Kanta University. The problem will continue, and parts of the rice fields will have to become seafood farms or grow fruit or other crops, Tuan added. Shrimp farmers say they are already dealing with worrying signs that the water is getting saltier faster. Tui said it was harder to find fresh water now. We are very concerned that because of rising seawater levels, our farms will one day be underwater, Tui added. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
American space agency NASA says it has expanded its Mars helicopter mission after the experimental aircraft successfully completed several test flights. The helicopter, named Ingenuity, made history last month by becoming the first aircraft to perform a powered, controlled flight on another planet. Mission controllers say the helicopter has performed above expectations in all four of its test flights so far. While many test flights were carried out on Earth, Ingenuity was launched to demonstrate that a small helicopter could actually fly on Mars. During its fourth flight on April 30th, NASA said Ingenuity reached a height of about 5 meters and beat the aircraft's speed and distance records from earlier flights. Now that the mission has successfully met its first goals, NASA says it expanded the project to an operational demonstration. This new part of the mission is expected to test Ingenuity's ability to explore different parts of the planet from the air. In its past flights, Ingenuity has been taking off and landing near NASA's Perseverance Explorer, or rover. The rover is on its own mission to search for signs of ancient microbial life on Mars. It was carrying Ingenuity when it landed at the planet's Jezero crater in February. NASA's first stated goals with Ingenuity were to complete a series of flights to see how high and how far the aircraft could progress in each test. The demonstration flights were expected to end in early May. In the new tests, controllers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California aim to have Ingenuity travel farther and operate more independently from Perseverance. Project manager Mimi Ong said in its fifth flight, which currently has no set date, Ingenuity will move to a new airfield as engineers attempt to press the helicopter beyond its design limits. The new tests should give NASA a more detailed picture of how Ingenuity's equipment operates in different conditions. The flights could also be the basis for designing future aircraft to perform search and collection missions on Mars or other planets. Ingenuity is also expected to carry out activities to support Perseverance's ongoing mission. NASA says the helicopter can fly over nearby areas to observe science targets or help map out travel paths for the rover. Ingenuity can also capture images to be used for future Mars mapping operations. Such flights by Ingenuity, while not planned in the beginning, are now a bonus and not a requirement for Perseverance to complete its science mission, a NASA statement said. The space agency plans at least 3 operational test flights in May, and the helicopter mission could go even longer if all goes well. Ingenuity loves Mars, Ong recently told reporters about the helicopter's mission. It takes off, and I almost feel the freedom that it feels, she said. NASA officials say that even though Ingenuity was designed to operate on Mars for 30 days, it can probably survive the freezing Martian nights for at least another few months. The helicopter also has to work harder on Mars, where the atmosphere is much thinner. Engineers have said Ingenuity's blades have to spin 5 times faster than on Earth to successfully fly. We really do expect some finite life, Ong said, adding, so it will be a race between how long these parts surprise us in surviving. I'm Brian Lynn.
Our National Parks journey across the United States takes us to southwestern Colorado. We are visiting a large U.S. national park called Mesa Verde. It was established to protect the culture of ancient Native Americans. Mesa Verde National Park is over 100 years old. In 1906, then-President Theodore Roosevelt signed a bill creating the park. Mesa Verde offers visitors a look into the lives of the ancestral Pueblo people, who lived in the area between 700 and 1,400 years ago. The national park protects almost 5,000 archaeological sites. They are some of the best preserved archaeological areas in the country.
The term Mesa Verde is Spanish for green table. Early Spanish explorers gave the name to the area. In geology, a mesa is a flat-topped highland with steep sides. Mesa Verde is not actually a mesa. It is a cuesta, a term used to describe a hill with a sharp drop on one side and a soft, gentle slope on the other. A more correct name for the national park, then, would be Cuesta Verde. The gently sloping side of Mesa Verde was important in the formation of the 600 cliff dwellings within the park. Cliff dwellings are living areas that were set up in caves, the large open areas in the side of the cliff.
Mesa Verde rises more than 540 meters above the ground. Visitors can drive to the top of the hill on a winding mountain road. In the distance are the flatlands and mountains of an area called the Four Corners. That is where the western states of Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona meet. Some of the ruins in the Four Corners area are from the earliest people who lived there. They were hunters and gatherers, now known as basket makers. The basket makers lived in simple caves. The first evidence that ancient people had moved to Mesa Verde is from about 1,500 years ago. Those people lived in pit houses, large holes in the ground with wood and mud covering the top. In the 8th century, the early Pueblo people began building square structures of large connected rooms, or pueblos, above ground. More than 300 years later, they climbed down the canyon walls and began building cliff dwellings.
Today, visitors to Mesa Verde National Park can see some of the remains of all four kinds of settlements. Visitors are able to explore several of Mesa Verde's renowned cliff dwellings. Many of them take several hours to reach by foot. Signs along some of the paths point to trees and plants used by the ancestral Puebloan people. Visitors will also find the juniper and pinyon pine trees that make Mesa Verde green. Cliff Palace is the largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde and North America. It has 150 rooms. It is not easy to get to Cliff Palace. Visitors must climb down into the canyon on a narrow path with many steps. They must also climb down several ladders. But the trip is well worth the effort. Visitors can examine this beautiful structure made of stone and clay. Spruce Treehouse is the third largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde. It has 114 rooms. It also has 8 underground rooms called kivas. Pueblo Indian men gathered in the kivas for ceremonies.
Mesa Verde National Park occupies 21,000 hectares of land in Montezuma County, Colorado. About 500,000 people visit the park each year. Archaeologists working in Mesa Verde have recovered many objects that the ancient Pueblo people used, including tools and jewelry. Many of the objects can be seen in the visitors' center. However, human remains or any object from a burial area may not be touched or shown. This is to respect the wishes of the modern Puebloan people who live in the area today. Mesa Verde has been recognized as a special place. The United Nations named it as one of the first World Heritage Sites in 1978. Today's Pueblo Indians consider Mesa Verde a sacred place, and for visitors from around the world, it remains a place of mystery and beauty. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.